We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Monday, November 15th. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz this morning. You are powered by the Varsity Podcast Network. It is our college football recap show as we recap the action that happened this past weekend and look forward to the week ahead. Also talk about college football playoff rankings and what I see as the top six, what the committee might do as the top six or top seven now. Guys, it's a TV show. Remember, it's a TV show first and foremost. Gabe, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. It was a fairly predictable, a couple little surprises at college football. That part of my life is in good shape. But I found our new place, Jeff. Next time you come West Coast, okay. I found our spot. Listen to this. It's adult and child heaven, all right? Barbecue, ooh, bar, football on TV, outdoors, a giant playground and turf field that's fenced in and safe. Oh. Airplanes landing a few hundred yards away, so kids are mesmerized.
They love it.
All of this is possible for you next time you come to the West Coast.
It's by LAX?
Yeah, it's a place called Proud Bird.
Wow.
Jeff, it's okay. It's the greatest football place you could possibly go to.
Well, I need to do that because obviously to watch football with kids, and that's the one benefit about the East Coast, by the way, is that most time Oregon plays after the kids go to sleep, so I don't have to worry about that at all. By the way, Oregon won last night late. And I try to get off my chest, guys. I know we love style points in college football. I know it's important. We love them. But sometimes it doesn't tell the story of the game. And Oregon's won three straight games by double digits. And they could have won by 21 last night. But Washington State scored with 2 seconds left. The game before that, they could have won by 21 points too. They just didn't score at the end of the game. They didn't score. A week before that, 3 weeks ago, they were up 45-14 in the fourth quarter. Pull all their starters. They still won by three touchdowns, but it wasn't as pretty. It didn't look as cool. Like, style points is so frustrating. But this was a weekend, not like last one, where we had survive in advance. A lot of teams played some really good football this weekend. We'll start with our thick six, our top six here. We had a great thick six, by the way. A non-thick six in the NFL on Thursday night. Did not count. And then we had one last night, yesterday, I should say, Rutgers, their left tackle, scored a touchdown on tackle screen with a neck roll, dove in the end zone. Big boy, again, it's his second thick six, by the way. Thick six. I'm going to make that a thing.
It was so joyous to watch you especially, but Mike Golick, Ross Tucker, all the big boys on football Twitter just going insane for that play on Thursday night. It was so fun to watch.
And for those who missed it, Robert Hunt of the Dolphins dove into the end zone. He caught a screen that wasn't for him. And he just, it's the only time in the history of sport, of watching football, where an offensive lineman, college and NFL, was praised for doing the wrong thing and having a mental error. He did both things at the same time. He didn't block his assignment. He caught a pass that wasn't intended for him. And it was 3rd and 6 in the red zone. It was at the 6-yard line, like an important play. Just did whatever he wanted to do. But it was such an incredible athletic achievement that it just did not matter. I mean, Texas could have used him this past weekend.
Yeah, Texas could have used about 5 of him on their line.
Yeah, even though they scored 55 points last night, so it didn't matter.
they're definitely not back. We have to talk about this because you brought it up. They're not back, and is Sark already in trouble? Like, I don't even know. They obviously get a year or two to try to figure a program out, but it's Texas. It's not like it ever completely collapsed. It shouldn't be this bad.
Yeah. The problem is for Sark is, you know, after the game, I saw a quote where it's like, have the players quit or something. And he's like, you got to ask them. I mean, like, whoa. Like if that's the case, then you need to, that's not good, right?
No.
If you don't know whether your players, I don't think that they've quit, but like, it's just, it's not great. And look, defensively, they're a mess. Offensively, they've been fine. I mean, they've just been just a wreck. I mean, they lost in overtime 57-56 to Kansas, who never, correct me if I'm wrong here, Hank, Kansas had never won at Texas, correct? I believe that's right.
I can give you a stat. Kansas has never won a football game in this decade or something. Like, how's that sound? They stink. It's ridiculous.
Okay, here's the thing about coaching, and we're going to get into this probably at some point near in December when things slow down a little bit about coaching hires. So there's a lot of people in the hot seat, right? Sark, obviously, after one season is in the hot seat. Dan Mullen had to come from behind to beat Samford this past weekend. We'll get into SEC scheduling in just a few minutes, by the way. And you know, Jim Harbaugh, who's going to win 10 games again after he wins this weekend. When you fire a coach, you have to hire someone who's better. That's a theory, right? Of course. You don't hire a lateral move and you don't hire down. So Dan Mullen, for example, if you fire Dan Mullen of Florida, who are you getting that's better? People are like, well, Mario Cristobal. I mean, okay, sure. He won't go back to Miami, but he's going to Florida. Are you sure about that? Who are you? And before the Ohio State game, everyone thought he was a bum anyways. Like, who are you hiring that's better? If you get rid of Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, yeah, you might not beat Ohio State again this season. I don't know. But, Gabe, like, who are you hiring that's better than Jim Harbaugh at Michigan? That's the question you have to answer. Look, for USC, USC is maybe James Franklin, maybe I was not impressed with Penn State's play calling against Michigan, just kind of the overall body of work. Like, I think James Franklin is losing that USC job, 6-4 this season. I mean, USC had to hire someone else. Clay had lost the team. But this idea of there's just this plethora of amazing coaching candidates around the country that are going to revitalize your program, I just don't see it, Gabe. I don't.
Well, yeah. We're going to touch on several of the teams you just brought up, and I think it's sort of like baseball fans with their trade deadline trade ideas. You know, it's all hypothetical. It's all in a blue sky, perfect world when people are talking about which great coach is going to come coach their team. Just like, you know, you're going to be able to trade nothing for 2 all-stars to take your team to the playoffs. Like, it doesn't work that way. I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your thick six, though. You were about to get into these teams that you see as the best teams right now and then compare that a little bit to how the playoff rankings will look.
Okay, so again, you know, the best six teams is obviously much different than I think the top six might be. And so, you know, number one is Georgia, man. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I mean, they Tennessee for a few minutes had them on the ropes, and I think Tennessee's just not good enough to compete. But we saw a little bit of a blooper, right? If you go fast on offense, you have a chance to kind of slow down a big physical defense, which is what Oregon has done way back with Chip Kelly when Chip Kelly first installed that offense. We played USC in 2007. The entire defense on USC got drafted. We just wore them down with speed. Now, we were much better than Tennessee, like personnel-wise, we were better than Tennessee. But they gave a little bit of glimpse. But I just don't know. You know, if you make one or two mistakes on Georgia, boom, like that's it. You're done. And so, I mean, they covered that game too. Like, it wasn't even – it was not even close, dude. I mean, they dominated Tennessee 41-17. Tennessee scored at the very end to make that game a little bit. I think it's the most points Georgia's allowed all season, 17 now. And it was, again, like the last play of the game Tennessee scored. So they're easily number one. And I don't think anyone's beating them this year. Alabama, I'll put it number two again. They dominated some team from somewhere that had one win. I mean, I don't think Bama's going to beat Georgia. I just don't. Georgia's, they're so dominant on defense. You have to score 24, 28 points on them. They're just not allowing, points, Gabe.
I can't talk you out of anything you just said. I refuse to watch any of that Bama game. We will get into that. It's a disgrace. And I was watching some of the Georgia-Tennessee game, and that whole window was rough, man. That's normally the best part of the day, right? Like, for me at least, kids are starting to chill out. I got two or three games to pick from on the big networks, and they were just a bunch of duds in that hour. That Georgia game was not competitive.
No, it wasn't. It was not competitive at all. So next up on this, okay, the third best team in the country, I really think Ohio State's playing good football. I know that the rankings will still have Oregon third, and I think Oregon's playing good football too. But Ohio State's they kind of weathered a couple storms. They could score. They're the only team that has a chance, I think, to score on Georgia in the country. Like score consistently on Georgia. I'll put them three. I'll put Oregon four. Again, it's just a style points thing. Oregon's just not going to give you style points. Not what they do. But they've allowed 47 non-garbage time points the last 3 weeks. And they've rushed for 1,000 yards. Like, they're a good football team, guys. I know that you want to hate on the Pac-12. Entering this weekend, according to Chris Felica, you know, ESPN, and College Game Day, he put out strength of schedule rankings for the top 10 teams. Oregon had the number one strength of schedule out of the top 10 teams. Now, it's going to change because Oregon played Washington State and Ohio State played Purdue. But now Oregon gets a ranked Utah team on the road this weekend. So their number... They're number four right now. All right.
Can I just jump in and say also, though, that people have to remember, if they're comparing Oregon and Ohio State, which we may not have to do any longer, but if you're trying to compare them, every time Ohio State looks better, every time they win another important game, Oregon looks better.
Yeah. It's frustrating to me how... This narrative of like Ohio State has gotten better, but Oregon hasn't. Our defense has gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
We're running the ball better now. Like, we're playing better football now, just as Ohio State is playing. But no, do we play a different style of game? Yes. Oregon is going to try to grind you down to the nub. Now, in the second half of games, they're going to run the football every play and say, hey, you have to stop us. We're going to grind you down to a nub. And Ohio State doesn't do that. They have a high power passing attack. We don't have that. You can win different ways. So number five for me, look, I think Michigan is the fifth best team in the country. I don't know if they're good, but they keep winning games, Gabe, and they do it kind of like the way Oregon does, right? They just kind of grind your ass down. Play good defense. Don't make mistakes. There's something to not making mistakes. There's something to that, right? A lot of teams make mistakes. They don't. I'll put Cincinnati six. I do think that Michigan goes ahead of Cincinnati in the playoff. I think that's going to be the top six.
Okay.
Even though Michigan did just beat Michigan, even though they lost to Michigan State, the committee showed you last week they don't care about that. And Cincinnati struggled early on to put away in South Florida. They're bad. So I think that that's how it's going to go.
Okay, well, you just gave me my segue, which is that you're basically counting on, the committee you're thinking is counting on the SEC and the Big 12 to sort of beat each other up enough that they can leave Cincinnati out until they just have to put them in. That's what you're counting on?
I think last week showed that very, very clearly that they're going to wait till the last second to put Cincinnati in. Because remember in 2014, it was the year Oregon got in. TCU was like number three all year long. And then boom, they went to number five in the final rankings. They don't want to do that again. Mm-hmm. And they're all play each other. Ohio State and Michigan play each other. Right. Oregon's got Utah twice. This will all work itself out. Or Alabama, Georgia are on a collision course to play each other. It'll all get sorted out. Cincinnati keep winning, they'll be in.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Yeah. No, they probably set it up well, because they can basically say, what do you want from us, to whoever complains? You've had a little Freudian slip there when you said Oklahoma by accident, but let's go there, because that was actually the biggest, newsiest game of the weekend. And now Oklahoma may be irrelevant to the playoff chase. That's debatable. But when you got two QBs, you have none. Well, now Oklahoma has two QBs again, right? Right when we thought we were going to give Caleb Williams, the true freshman, a real chance at the Heisman, we thought they were going to beat Baylor for their best win of the season and go on this run down the stretch. But nope. Not only did they not win, Caleb didn't look good, and they went back to Spencer Rattler. What the hell are they doing? I don't have to read you all the takes, but Skip had it best. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Lincoln Riley just made the mistake of the year, replacing a struggling Caleb Williams with preseason Heisman favorite Spencer Rattler. There goes Caleb's Heisman chances, the national championship, and now they've somehow created a quarterback controversy. What the hell are they doing?
Yeah, so if you have two quarterbacks, you have none, right? And there's not even a quarterback controversy. It's just that it's not working for Oklahoma, and Lincoln Riley panicked again, right? Because nothing's working. The offensive line's not playing as they have in the past. There's no deep passing game. It's just not working as well as it has in the past. And when you pull a quarterback like that, you hope to get a spark. But the reason there's no spark is because the parts are not working very well. Like, it's not like they were quarterback away from winning this game. They weren't close to doing much of anything in this game. And teams have either figured out Lincoln Riley or figured out the formula they use, or Caleb Williams and Spencer Rattler just aren't as good as we thought, which, by the way, completely possible this year, because the quarterbacks this season just aren't as good. And Oklahoma's eighth in college football playoff rankings, and everyone's like, oh, Oklahoma should get some love. Well, they showed you that that's why they weren't getting any love, right? Because they have to, there's this tough stretch, and they weren't able to do it. And look, Baylor offensively wasn't great in this game. They had a long 80-yard run to set up a score. But Oklahoma just got their butts whooped, man. Like, they're not as good this season. And we look at Clemson, Oklahoma, even like a Florida. It's some years are just not as good, Gabe. And I know it's hard for fans to accept that's the case. And I'm a fan of a team. I get that. But sometimes that is what it is. You're just not as good one season. And Oklahoma, Gabe, high expectations as usual. They're not as good this season. Now, all that being said, the Iowa State at home this weekend, who they've struggled with in the past, they go to Oklahoma State, who's playing some really good football. And Oklahoma State's going to be a top seven-ish team, seven or eight right now. And then if they win, they beat Oklahoma State, I'm fairly certain they would play them again in the Big 12 championship game, like Utah and Oregon play each other so quickly. So I'm surprised that kind of this quarterback whisperer hasn't been able to find his guy this year, but it's not. You have down years sometimes. Like, it kind of just is what it is sometimes.
Jeff, I mean, come on. I grew up a Mets and Jets fan. You don't have to explain down years to me.
No. I mean down years when you're a good team and then you have a down year, not when you're just bad and always have a down year.
Oh, sorry. Well, okay. Then I became a bandwagon Lakers and USC fan, so I also understand this feeling.
There you go. But USC hasn't been good since you're on the bandwagon, though.
Okay. But that's not why I brought it up. And if we're going to just trash on the people who helped put this show together, let's just point out for a second that poor Hammer and Hank, our producer from Texas, well, he's not from Texas, but he's a Texas guy, the worst losing streak since the 50s. I don't even know if they had like more than six teams in college football in 1956, but five game losing streak for Texas. We talked about Sark being on the hot seat. That's obvious. But I mean, they're losing to the teams that like are the gimmies. You know, they're only supposed to lose to Oklahoma, maybe. And now they're losing to Kansas. I mean, my goodness.
It's fun to bash on them, but Texas hasn't been good in a while. I mean, it's what they are now. They have to find a way to get out of this sort of perpetual suckiness. And I've said this for a while now, and I think it's a case for USC, for Michigan a little bit, not so much for Michigan. I don't think Harbaugh really is this way, but Texas, Florida State, Miami, Nebraska. Stop talking about the past. Stop talking about what we used to do. Talk about what we're doing. Does Nick Saban ever talk about his teams 10 years ago? No. Like, talk about the few. I don't ever hear Georgia fans talk about the 1980 championship. Like, they talk about now, here and now. Talk about now. And they talk so much about the past. I see this with USC all the time, man. Oh, my God. What we did 18 years ago. Okay. Recruits are 16 years old right now. 17 years old. They don't care what you did 20 years ago.
I love this take from you. You know, you're a progressive guy. You're a forward-thinking guy. That's why you're an Oregon Duck. So let me look forward for you then. If you don't want to look back for Texas, let's look forward. When does the SEC call and say, hey, just kidding, that whole deal we were trying to work out blew up all of college football? It's off. You stink. You'd be the ninth best team in our conference if we let you in. You're out. Any chance?
No, because of the revenue, Texas is the highest producing athletic department. It'd be funny if they did, Gabe, but you know, Oklahoma and Texas are not going to win the same in the SEC, man. It's a different beast.
Okay.
But they will get to schedule Southwestern Texas State in week 11 though. So that might be helpful for, instead of Kansas, you're playing Southwestern Texas State.
Okay, you keep teasing this topic that's driving me crazy about SEC scheduling. We're getting there. Cincinnati, you mentioned them, and we talk about them as being outside, looking in, just waiting for some of the big boys to knock each other off. I watched a little bit of that game Friday night, and I bet a lot of people got their first real look at them, because no, I think all of us were like, whatever, I'll pay attention when I have to. So they're the only thing on Friday. It was just ahead of the men's national team game. By the way, America, we beat Mexico 2-0, big game. But I watched the fourth quarter, and I saw a team that, like, really isn't that good, and I saw them give up a 98-yard touchdown drive to a freshman from USF. They, you know, they gave up 28 points. Like, the Cincinnati team just isn't it, and that was my first chance to see it.
They're not as good as they were last year. I think they were better last season.
Which is crazy, because here they are with their best chance yet.
Look, there's this thing that's happening where people say, I've seen this with Oregon and with even Notre Dame last season, who was the four seed, is they say something like, well, Oregon can't beat Georgia, or Notre Dame can't beat Alabama. Yeah, no shit, man. Like, no one's beating Georgia this year. Cincinnati, Oregon, Oklahoma. Like, anyone you put in that four seed, Oklahoma State, Michigan, they're not beating Georgia. But Cincinnati keeps winning football games, and at some point you have to reward them for winning football games. Yeah, they lose to Georgia by 21 to 28 points. Well, Oregon might lose by 17 points instead. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to beat Georgia this season. But that doesn't mean that they can't get the chance, because, again, if they keep winning out and everyone loses or just kind of stays the same. I mean, look, if Alabama loses to Georgia, Cincinnati's probably in. Obviously, if Oregon loses, Cincinnati's going to be in. If Ohio State loses, not really to Michigan, maybe. But Cincinnati, it feels like they're going to be in at some point, but not to the final week. And then they get their chance. They play Georgia, and they're in the playoff, lose by 21 to 28 points. And we just say, all right, well, that was fun. That was fun. But no one would have done better. I mean, Alabama, Notre Dame last year, right? Everyone's like, oh, Alabama's going to get creamed. Yeah, well, who would have done better? Like, who would have done better? These semifinals are all blowouts, because there really is such a big talent discrepancy most often between the SEC team and whoever else they're playing. It's just the way it is.
Okay, well, then let's talk about one of the teams that's not in the SEC but has been competitive. At least historically, if I'm allowed to look back in time, Jeff. So Ohio State escapes the Purdue spoiler makers with the big win. That could be the first of six ranked wins in a row that they're basically going to need to get in. We're just giving them ranked wins from here on out. But here's the thing, Jeff. I've sort of talked about it on the show without having watched a lot. Now I've seen a little bit more. I just don't. You're not going to convince me CJ Stroud's a great quarterback. I mean, I know the offense is great. I know he has NFL receivers at every position, and he's probably fine, but you can't convince me he's great, and you need to be great to beat the team you keep bringing up, which is Georgia. Like, what do I make of Ohio State if that's the best they can do?
So Ohio State's offense reminds me a lot of Alabama's last season for this reason. You know, Devontae Smith won the Heisman last season because, you know, he was just the best wide receiver in the country. And everyone would decide, was it Mac Jones or Devontae Smith? It was Devontae Smith. It was easily Devontae Smith. And this offense, you look at CJ Stroud, is it CJ Stroud or is it Olave or Wilson? Two guys are going to be first round draft picks at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Is it the scheme that is really set up to throw the ball deep and kind of get behind defenses? So the numbers look better. That's what I think it is, right? CJ Stroud's a good football player. But he's not, in my opinion, he might win the Heisman. I don't know. But I attribute it more to, like, the scheme and the weapons than I do just overall CJ Stroud play. Because most of the Heisman winners are quarterback. Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, Marcus Mariota. Like, they bring an element of running the football with their legs. They have signature plays that you're like, wow, that is a Marcus Mariota play. That's a Lamar Jackson signature play. We don't really have that with C.J. Stroud right now. And maybe it comes up against Michigan State this weekend. Maybe it comes up against Michigan in 2 weeks. But there's not like that. Now, I've seen plenty of great catches by wide receivers. I've seen guys running open, and the ball has to get to them. So I'm not minimizing Stroud's ability to get the ball to wide receivers. But I'm with you, Gabe. I don't think he's as good as the points they put up. But he's still a really good quarterback. Like, I think the bar is just so high with, if we're talking about, like, Heisman winner.
Yeah, okay. Then I agree with every word of that. And I guess what I would say, to my eyes, his receivers are always wide open. They look completely uncoverable, yeah, either through scheme or just pure talent. They're always a couple steps away from whoever's trying to guard them. And he throws the ball in their vicinity and they make a play. I have not seen too many balls thrown in the perfect spot, as you like to say, throwing them open or giving them a lane after the catch. I see guys who are just sort of doing unbelievable things to get wide open and then barely able to grab the ball and then not gaining the yardage they should. It seems like they're actually not that good.
Who, the wide receivers?
No, the wide receivers are great. I'm saying, like, they could be a lot better if he could put it where it's supposed to be. That's what I'm saying.
Right, which is really the Mac Jones, Devontae Smith discussion from last year, where Devontae Smith actually could have been almost better if Mac Jones threw the ball. And Devontae Smith made it a ton of tough catches. And so this is what I'm talking about. Like, I think it's more an environment of the offensive wide receivers than it is just the quarterback.
Okay. Well, maybe if C.J. Stroud's lucky, he can end up on an NFL team where you don't have to follow the rules. There's no consequence for being a dirty player. You know, maybe the whole world will be gifted to him like it was for Mac. Maybe that'll be his future. Good luck, CJ.
The NFL determined that was not a dirty play, and therefore Mac Jones did not get fined. Gabe, you have to trust the NFL in these circumstances.
Oh, very credible, you know, system we have here. I feel like Mac or somebody in the Patriots organization is like a cooperating witness in some, whichever of the investigations is going on right now. Like, what do they know? How are they not getting fined for that?
Except the difference is that Tom Brady got suspended 4 games for an equipment malfunction. And the rule book says like $5,000 fine. So they owe the Patriots a little bit of leniency after that bullshit.
That, you've seen enough mob movies. Well, maybe you haven't.
I actually like mob movies. I've seen all of them.
Okay. So you've seen mob movies. You know that there's this moment where the whoever it is that turned on the inside of the mafia is dealing with the FBI agent or whoever it is. And they gotta be like, look, man, you gotta take me out in handcuffs. Like, you can't. It'll be too obvious that I'm cooperating with you. You know, do something, rough me up, put me away for a couple of years. Otherwise, I'm dead meat. That's what they do. These little stupid little punishments. Oh, $500,000 fine. Oh, we took away a draft pick. That's all just to cover their tracks, Jeff.
It might be. I mean, it certainly might be. I mean, I've always thought like Taysom Hill has copper mat on Sean Payton. Like, there's something he has, like, something, there's some naked photos of Sean Payton or some secret he has why he gets paid so much money to do nothing. So yeah, it's possible that New England has something on Robert Kraft, has had something, like, maybe he's the one funneling all the money to Goodell, the $64 million a year, whatever Goodell makes. So, all right, this is a, yeah, we're off the rails. And all right, let's get back to SEC's scheduling.
Well, we were talking Mac Jones, so let's talk about the team he left, Alabama. I looked up before this week, excited for, hey man, it's November, it's getting late in the year, what great games are there? I just did what I did every week. I scrolled down the top 25 and I saw some pretty good matchups. I was really excited about Oklahoma Baylor. I saw, wait, who? I can't even remember the team's name. Alabama was playing some team from the California Penal League and they were favored by 50-plus points, 50-plus. I think it was 52.5 in some books.
By the way, Alabama has rarely covered those 50-point spreads they did yesterday.
50-something points, and they covered, and probably didn't play anyone in the second half. I didn't even look. It's insulting to all of our time to have to look at games like that. Why on earth is Alabama playing whatever the hell that was in November? How is this possible?
New Mexico State Aggies. So the SEC does this. They schedule every team gets a layup in November. So Alabama played New Mexico State. Now, Florida played Samford. They were losing at halftime. I mean, that's not the way it's supposed to be. And then next week is really the week. So it typically is before rivalry week. So next weekend, Georgia has Charleston Southern. A&M has Prairie View A&M. Kentucky has New Mexico State. So they get them ripe off of the Alabama win. Mississippi State has Tennessee State. And then Tennessee has South Alabama and LSU has Louisiana Monroe. I bet LSU can lose that game too, which is really funny because Louisiana Monroe has won some of these games before.
I think that's where the water boy played. What are these schools?
It is. Okay. So the SEC does this the week before they play the rivalry games to kind of give their teams a little bit of a bye week. Now, to be fair, some teams do have tough non-conference. Georgia played Clemson this year. Alabama played Miami. Like Alabama does schedule up, but they only play two non-conference games to start the year, and then they play the SEC schedule and then play one this week. I actually like this kind of schedule. It'd be nice if instead of Oregon playing Utah this weekend, we played Utah State before we played Oregon State, right? It'd be kind of nice to have that built-in sort of bye before you play your rival, before your biggest game of the year a lot of times. But this is no different than Oregon scheduling Stony Brook. It's just Oregon plays that team at the beginning of the season. The SEC plays them now. That's the big difference between that. But also, too, you know, part of the issue is the SEC has 8 conference games. The Pac-12 has 9. So that's why this extra game sometimes feels even weighted differently to help the SEC because they have that 4th game where the Pac-12 doesn't, the ACC doesn't. The Big Ten, I think, plays 9 conference games. They play 8 conference games. It's an advantage for them. The Pac-12 needs to go to 8 conference games. They 100% have to do that and schedule a Utah State, a Portland State, something, East-West Tech State, and do that in this last week of the season. I'm for that. I'm for the scheduling if it helps us make a playoff.
Then that's what has to happen, and that's the reason I brought it up, is like, you know, whatever. This is within the rules, obviously. This is something plenty of fans knew about. I'm bringing it up because it was so jarring this particular week.
It's going to be more jarring next week when all the ones I just rattled off, there's like 6 of them next week. Yeah, so really the crux of this is the SEC plays 8 conference games. Most college conferences play 9. So they'd schedule this one extra game this time of year. But look, again, Alabama and Georgia played up this year. They played Clemson. They played Miami. Like they've scheduled Oregon plays Georgia next season in week 1. Like some of these teams do schedule tough non-conference games. It's just this extra week where they don't have a conference game and everyone else does kind of shitty for those other conferences.
Well, I didn't like it. And I think everyone has to either agree it shouldn't be this way and sort of regulate it away, or it will mean, like you just said, every other conference that wants to be more competitive is over time, and schedules take years to fix. But they're going to have to do what the SEC is doing, and then we're going to have some percentage less number of good football games every season because everyone's going to do this.
But if you expand the playoff, then you can schedule up again, right? Like, look, they're showing you this season, they have rewarded Oregon for going to Ohio State and winning that game. If we go to a 12-team playoff, maybe Oregon have to play Ohio State because they're in really no matter what. I mean, Oregon, USC, Utah, those 3 teams will be the playoffs 2 or 3 times, you know, 2 of the 3 every single year, right? Just kind of virtue of how the playoffs would work out. But it does. Oregon's not in the playoff without beating Ohio State.
That's right.
So there is some incentive to keep playing these bigger games. And if you are an automatic qualifier into the playoff for winning your conference, playing a big non-conference, like if Oregon, Georgia play next season in week 1, if Oregon loses that game, they're probably not a playoff team, right? Because no Pac-12 team has run the table since 2010. Since the league expanded to 12 teams, no one has gone undefeated in the conference. So if they lose to Georgia, they're going to win 12 games in a row to get back to the playoff. But if you're an automatic qualifier, you lose to Georgia, you still win the Pac-12 at 10-2, 11-2, you make the playoff. So it will benefit scheduling to have a 12-team playoff format where you get automatic qualifiers in.
Yeah. Okay. I guess when you say it all, it does actually mean that some of those great early season matchups are effectively like first round playoff games that just played out of order. I sort of follow the logic now. All right. Well, I mean, look, I'm not looking forward to seeing Georgia beat Charleston Southern next week. I'm not looking forward to that at all. Ole Miss Vanderbilt pass, although I guess that's not really one of those weird ones. That's just a crappy game. Ole Miss Texas A&M, kind of an exciting game. Heisman race heating up. The names are starting to take shape. You know, I don't think it's going to be like the kind of Heisman year we expected, but it's got some names.
I think Kenneth Walker is going to win at Michigan State.
I think so too.
That's my guess, just because, you know, Kenny Pickett's not a big enough name at Pittsburgh. He doesn't have a signature moment. You know, we have a signature moment from Kenneth Walker, and he still has two games coming up, Penn State, and he has Ohio State. But really, the Heisman this year should be Matt Araiza, the punter from San Diego State, who also kicked a game-winning field goal last night. Matt Araiza was on pace to set the all-time record for punting average, and he increased his average last night. He averaged 55.6 yards per punt last night. He should win the Heisman.
This show has been the Matt Araiza champion squad. If he were going to get any Heisman votes, it's because somebody listened to this show, hear him come up every single week. I wish for this young man that he had figured this out about a decade sooner, because he is about to head to the NFL where no special teams is required, where kickers don't get to play, where punting is frowned upon.
Dude, he punts and does field goals.
Yeah, I know.
It's unheard of. He set the record last night for most 50-yard punts in a season, and he had 33. Dude, this guy is a monster. He should be all hail our Heisman King.
He is the Otani of special teams, but you know
he is the Otani of special teams. All right, Gabe.
Can I correct the record on something I said earlier? It's a very critical, yes, important thing for the listeners of this show. Hammer and Hank, our producer, who I said was from Maryland and then became a Texas guy, actually incorrect. From Texas, grew up in Maryland. Went to Texas, found his roots. So he was born into this Texas stuff.
I don't know who Hank roots for. It's so confusing.
He just roots. You know what I like about Hank? He deep down, Hank is just a troll, just like me. He just roots for other people's unhappiness.
I think he's like a Longhorn, Yankees, Lakers, like that type of guy fan, you know, like Cowboys fan. They're just like, he just kind of picks the bandwagon teams.
That's how it is for this new generation of TikTokers. You pick what you like. You know, 45 seconds and that's enough for me. There's no investment. There's no time spent. There's no pain. It's all joy for these Gen Zers.
These Gen Zers. We sound like old grumpy men.
Is he even Z? Are we cycling? He might be Gen A. We might have to come back to the beginning again. He's so young.
What is after Gen Z?
I don't know. I don't know what comes next.
Like, what are our kids?
I don't know. I'm scared to see what they grow up.
Like, our parents are baby boomers. We're millennials.
I'm top tier millennial. I think I really identify more as Gen X.
So Gen X is between baby boomer and millennial?
I thought so.
Now
I don't know. I think I am technically by like a few months a millennial, but don't equate me with a millennial.
I think our kids are Gen A.
They are. That's what I'm saying. We're just going right back to the beginning again.
Oh, well, so you're what year were you born?
Which is perfect, because they won't know about history. They won't think anything happened before them. It'll be just what you want for college football. Their history doesn't matter anymore.
Well, actually, we're technically Gen Y.
We're Gen Y?
Technically, yeah. What year were you born?
82.
Yeah, Gen Y or millennials are born between 81 and 94 or 96. So that's us.
Okay.
And then Hank was born in, what, like 2013? Is that about right?
That sounds right to me.
So he's Gen Z. Makes sense. He's Gen Z. And then Gen A is our kids. So congratulations, Norman and Olivia. You're Gen A.
All right. Well.
All right.
We're out of stuff. We have an NFL show on Tuesday that will be really interesting this week, as we get an Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson both coming back
in the snow. It's snowing in Lambeau right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's going to be a wild NFL weekend that we'll touch on Tuesday, and then you're making bets on Thursday, and I know things are getting hot for you there.
Pac-12, 4-0 again this week.
Boom.
26-9 this season in the Pac-12.
Moneymaker.
That is never going to happen again. You had a Fabian at some point, I don't know, but not now, guys. All right, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. All right, powered by the Varsity Podcast Network. Talk to you guys then.